everybody. Welcome back to Gamer Heroes episode 22. I am Derek. I've got my co-host John on the line.
Hello. Welcome back.
How you doing, man?
Good, good. I'm ready to talk some games.
Well, I think the first thing we should talk about is all the stuff we've bought so far in the summer Steam sale. Because I know I've bought some stuff. I know I will probably get a couple more games before it ends on July 5th. But what did you get?
Well, I have unfortunately been splurging, but the deals are so hot. And if you guys, seriously, if you're a PC gamer and you haven't checked it out, go check it out now. I bought Dead Space, Dead Space 2, Doom, Half-Life 2, Half-Life, Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead 2.
Like, you're just buying all the bundles, man. You're just getting all the bundles.
I am. When they're $8 or $13 or $19.99, you just do it.
Was that your full list? Did you get more?
I have a few more, but they're not as exciting. They're kind of smaller games.
Right. So I've only bought a few so far. I did buy both Left 4 Deads. Because they were $1.49 a piece.
Exactly.
I picked up Super Hot for $15, which I actually played a little bit. It's not quite what I thought it was. It's not like a straight first-person shooter. It's more of like a puzzle first-person shooter. But we can talk about that another time. I picked up Roller Coaster Tycoon Deluxe because I love building simulations for $2.03. And then I picked up This War of Mine, along with both of the DLC packs, and that was the most expensive outside of Super Hot. But I got all that for under $30, so, you know, pretty excited. I'll probably pick up something else, maybe Doom. Doom was on my list. Nier Automata was on my list. That's 30% off, I think, or something like that. How about
Hollow Knight? Did you buy Hollow Knight?
I didn't. It's on my wish list. I might pick it up. I'm not sure.
Well, guys, if you haven't heard of Hollow Knight, it's a... It's a platformer. It's very interesting. It's very stylistic. It's very much like that one PS4 game that came out that was All in Shadow. Very similar to that.
I'm trying to think which one that is. But
so far, the reviews have been phenomenal. So I would say, you know, if you guys want to pick up a nice platformer, I recommend Hollow Knight.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll pick up some more games. The sale ends on July 5th. But at the same time, I did want to mention Best Buy is doing an interesting promotion for console games. It's only 11 different games, but if you pre-order one of these 11 games and you buy it, you get $10 back in Best Buy reward points.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
So if you're a Gamer Club member, you also get 20% off pre-orders. So, you know, you got a $60 game, you got 20% off of that, so that brings you down to $48, and then you'll get $10 back after that. So you're basically saving $22 on a regular game. So it's got some good titles, you know. For example, Assassin's Creed Origins, Call of Duty World War II, Far Cry 5, Star Wars Battlefront 2, as well as Super Mario Odyssey, South Park, The Fractured But Whole, Destiny 2 is also on the list. FIFA 18, Madden 18, and then Middle Earth Shadow of War, and NBA 2K18. So, you know, a wide range. You got some sports, you've got multiplayer, you've got exclusives and war movies and RPGs. So, you know, just something to be aware of.
Sounds like something for everyone.
Yeah, I picked up the Odyssey, South Park, and FIFA for Switch. So.
Dude, I haven't played an Odyssey game. Gosh, I haven't played since Odyssey 2, and that was... When would that
come out? I'm talking Mario Odyssey, man.
Okay, I'm sorry. I went off on a tangent to a whole different planet. I know we're talking Nintendo, but I, for some reason, was thinking the other Odyssey game.
It's all good.
But Mario Odyssey looks amazing, and I dream of the day when we can play cooperative and stream it on this show.
Oh, I'm so excited for it, man. It's coming. A couple months away. But But anyway, that's pretty much it for, like, cool salesy stuff that is time-sensitive. Anything else in the news you want to hit on before we talk about our main topic?
Just a couple things. I haven't had a chance to pick it up because it comes out, I believe it came out, or it does come out tomorrow. Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy has been nailing the reviews. So I looked at a screen comparison between the PlayStation 1 version and the PS4. Holy crap. seriously, the graphics is... The difference is insane. Insane.
Did you pre-order it?
I did not pre-order it. I was just going to go pick it up at GameStop.
Ah, okay. So I actually pre-ordered it. So I'm pretty stoked to pick that up from Best Buy tomorrow. So
Yeah. No, I'm very excited for it. And I have been. As soon as they announced it, I was very excited because I haven't touched a Crash Bandicoot game, an original game, since, I don't know, 2000, 98? I don't know, one of those years.
I've probably played 10 minutes of Crash Bandicoot in my entire life because I didn't really have PlayStations until the PS4. So I'm excited to actually get a chance to play these.
And this is, I don't know if you remember me saying this, but I did play Crash Bandicoot on Uncharted 4 as it was kind of a side mission. And it was updated graphics. And do you remember when I told you I did that? And I said, wouldn't it be funny if they just made that into a game?
Boom.
Look right at that. There. They redid it. Yeah, if you're PlayStation fans and you've played the Uncharted series, there's a portion in Uncharted 4, the final one, Thief's End, where his wife, Nathan Drake's wife, is challenging him to a game of Crash Bandicoot to see who gets the furthest in the stage, and you actually get to play it. It's pretty awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I've never played any of those, so this will be my first opportunity to play real Crash Bandicoot at, you know, dedicated time, so it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be really good, man.
Something I realized just before we actually got online here is tonight, and we're in the Midwest, so it's 11 p.m. for us, the Zelda Breath of the Wild DLC, the first part of it, of two parts, goes live. And... I've barely finished half the game.
Oh man, I'm less than that. Derek, tell them why you have not played any other game except for Minecraft this year.
That's not true. I played some other stuff, but
guys, Minecraft.
I have been playing a lot of Minecraft on my Switch. It's just very relaxing and kind of cathartic's not quite the right word, but it's very relaxing to sit there and just mine ore for a couple of hours and not worry about everything else going on. So, but yeah, I mean, this DLC is already out, and I mean, there's some cool stuff in here. You got the Trial of the Sword, Hero's Path mode, which shows you on the map where you've been over the last 200 hours of playing.
I'm interested in that. I think that's a really fun way to go back and see if you can get some of the... What was that little guy, if you find his – okay, I'm sorry.
The Korok seed?
The guy with the flower head, if you follow him.
Nah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
So there's a guy, he's like it's like a sunflower. It pops up in random parts of the map, and if you follow it, his sunflower
– The Korok seeds.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a fun way to go back and check those out.
You need to get like 900 of them to fully beat the game. There's also a hard mode, a travel medallion. There's more armor and some more Korok masks. So, you know, there's just a lot of good stuff in the first DLC. So if you're out there and you've beat the game already, here's a good way to add more content to it. I will have to hold off a little bit. So. But all right, man. So let's move on to our main topic here tonight. Which do you want to lead us into that?
Yeah. It's a really simple question that's kind of come up in the community a lot, and we're actually really curious to know what gamers think. And of course, we're going to tell you what we think. We don't really care whether you like it or not. but people have different reaction to this. So today we want to discuss, I want to say revamps or remastered versions of old consoles. So I call it impersonation retro gaming.
So, impersonation retro gaming.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I'm just going to kind of dive in there. In my personal opinion, we're talking about when a company like Nintendo, who has done this two times to us so far, will release a game, let's say the original Nintendo machine, and a updated version of it, and sell it for a certain amount of money, but lock it to the point where you're only able to play 30 games or something like that. As you know, the news, people have lost their minds, but apparently Nintendo is also releasing the Super Nintendo Classic, which is coming September 29th, with an unreleased version of Star Fox 2. That just the fact that it has an unreleased version of Star Fox 2, is that the only reason you're going to buy that system? What is your thoughts on impersonation retro gaming?
All right, so I'm a huge Nintendo fanboy. For those who are new to the show or something like that, back long before we had this podcast network, the Heroes Podcast Network, I actually wrote a weekly Nintendo column for a video game website. And Ooh. So I love Nintendo. And the NES Classic came out, and I looked at it and I thought, you know, those are some cool games. I don't have all of them, all 30 of them. But I'm not going to go and get this. This is a cool thing for people who are not hardcore gamers to get to share these types of old games with their friends or their kids to kind of relive their childhood and the games that they grew up with. I think it's a great way for parents to bond with their kids over the different generations of games. But that's not what it turned into. It turned into a cash-grabbing opportunity for secondary market sellers, people buying, you know, 5, 10, 15 of these and sell them on eBay and Amazon for, instead of the $60 retail price, for upwards of $250, $300. And that really bothered me, and so I didn't even look. I never looked for one. I never tried to buy one. Don't even know if I was in a store that had one at any time. Didn't bother with it.
Well, the secondary market is just ridiculous, in my opinion, because you're basically, just because you probably have a contact, you're buying it up so no one else can get it for the sheer fear purpose of making a profit, which is ridiculous, in my opinion. We should all have an equal chance.
Let's look at this new one. So you got the Super Nintendo Classic. Now, this is a little more up my alley because I personally prefer the Super Nintendo to the original Nintendo. Just a preference thing. We can argue about that some other time. But having Star Fox 2 on there is a big draw, and I'll get to that. But this game went on pre-order in the United Kingdom, and barely in the United States. I think Amazon had some. And it's already available on eBay, people flipping it for double the price, sometimes even as much as $300 again.
Ridiculous.
And it doesn't come out till September 29th. So what that means is you didn't buy it and decide you didn't want it, or you didn't buy the wrong thing, or someone got it for you as a gift, and so you're returning the other one. It's none of that. Whatever bullshit reason you can come up with to why you're trying to flip it, that hasn't happened yet. You pre-ordered it and immediately said, I can make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, and you're listening, and if you do that, don't do that. You're being a jackass. Because all you're doing is you're stopping somebody who really does want it from being able to have it. That's all you're doing. And so let's talk about Star Fox for a second here. So Nintendo is alive the way it is because of its first-party titles, right? There's a reason that they don't compete with the PlayStation and the Xbox and have not competed since probably the GameCube. The Wii and the Wii U, as well as the Switch, are complete departures from the way the video game industry is going from a hardware perspective. It's the games. It's Mario, it's Zelda, Metroid, Donkey Kong, Star Fox, F-Zero. And Star Fox is a franchise that is very polarizing. Some people truly love it, like I do. Other people think that it hasn't been good since the 64, which I think is probably fair. And Star Fox 2 is a game that was essentially finished. This game was done. There was box art. There were demos. There's beta software out there. This game was done, ready to be released, and Nintendo pulled the plug on it.
So here's my question then. If they pulled the plug and it never got released, what has it been doing just sitting around? Are the graphics going to be Super Nintendo or are they going to be HD?
No, they're going to be Super Nintendo. The reason the game was shelved is that this was going to be, and I quote, the Super Nintendo's swan song. This was going to be the final game released for the Super Nintendo before the 64. And because of that, it was 16-bit graphics, and it was lots of polygons to try and create 3D effects. And at the same time, PlayStation and Sega were able to do significantly better things in the graphics department when it came to games and 3D rendering. It looked old, it looked shoddy, and it looked out of date compared to what was on the market at the time the game would have released. But, as most big Nintendo fans have understood, it's never been about the graphics. You know, nobody's playing Mario Kart for realistic graphics as beautiful as the game is.
What are you saying?
In Mario Kart 8. No, it's true though, right? And so for people like me, Star Fox 2 was just an opportunity to play a sequel to a game I loved with new features and enhancements. You know, for example, you could pick your character. There were, I think, 8 playable characters or 6 playable characters, including a couple new ones. And you couldn't do that before. You were always Star Fox, and, you know, in the Star Fox 64 game, you were Star Fox, and things like that. So this was a cool opportunity to play somebody else. But they shelved it because of how the game looked, and they didn't want to be embarrassed or draw any criticisms or comparisons between what was on the market and Star Fox 2. So they shelved it. And that was it. That was the end of it. Nobody had heard about it really since then. There's some ROMs that are floating around if you choose to play games that way. As one guy decided to tell me that my interest in Star Fox 2 is misguided because he beat the game long ago. But, you do what you want if you find ROMs. I'm not going to hold any judgment here or turn anybody in, but I just don't do that personally. And the game wasn't finished. What you're going to get here is a finished, completed version of the game, just like they did for the NES where they fixed glitches and typos and things of that nature. These are not straight ports. But it's going to be hard to get this thing. You know, I believe it's going to be $80 USD. They say that they're making more of them. But again, it sold out instantly and immediately wound up on eBay. So you're going to have this type of issue again because people know that people want it. They're only producing it through the end of the year. So this is a collector's item. And the fact that it doesn't call itself a collector's item, I think, is the problem here. It should be a collector's item, and it's marketed as a toy. And when you market something as a toy, people are going to expect to be able to get it.
Well, Nintendo is notorious of so this is something I wanted to discuss on top of like I said, creating a system. In my opinion, it's kind of gimmicky. You're banking, like you said, you're banking that people, and don't get me wrong, the retro has boomed. The retro is coming back, and it's coming back strong. People are wanting that. People are interested in playing their beloved games from the past. They really are. Like, it's getting harder and harder to find those retro duo systems. Mm-hmm. But Nintendo, given their history, they're having trouble even producing the Switch. How are they going to produce this machine on top of that and still keep up with demand? Like, it's impossible for them. They're digging themselves a hole as far as a manufacturer goes.
It does seem a little frustrating given that part of their reason for cutting the NES Classics production was that they needed those resources to focus on other things.
Exactly.
Which was some combination of the Switch and the 2DS XL. That comes out here shortly in July.
But what is the justification for this console now?
I really don't know. It's a weird choice. I mean, it has fewer games. The NES had 30. This only has 21, which, of course, you know, the 21st game kind of being Star Fox 2. And it's got longer controller cables, which is nice, I guess. but it's a confusing decision here, basically, because they already ran into this issue. So unless they're going to produce 3, 4, 5 times as many, which would be shocking to me, they're going to run into the same problem. And Nintendo has an opportunity here to make 2017 their best year in 20 years, or best year since the launch of the Wii at a minimum, which was in 06. So the best, you know, in the last decade. But the NES Classic and the SNES Classic are two opportunities for them to fail. You know, the 3DS is still holding very, very strong. The Switch is just blowing everybody's expectations out of the water. They've got the success in the mobile industry with Pokemon Go. And now this is happening. So I think it's just one more place where they can screw up. And they've already shown that they can screw this up. So I'm hoping that they'll surprise me. But if you're listening to this and you expect to get one of these, I would be very vigilant, because I think you're going to end up in a store looking for one and they're not going to be there.
Right, right. It's just, like you said, it's just baffling in my head that they are taking on more, and I don't really think they can handle it, honestly. They're taking on much, much more than they can handle. They can't even keep up with the Switch, and the Switch is... It's more demanded and it's more money. So it's kind of one of those things, like, priority comes money, right? Wouldn't you rather produce what is?
That's the thing. Money? The Switch is the future. People are buying games, mostly first party games. So what is the advantage to selling a classic? I don't know.
That's what I'm still trying to figure out. Let me ask you this. So had they not done these re-releases, like they did with the first Nintendo Classic, that you could not get your even see one. I didn't even get to see one. I went in the day it launched, and seriously, I went at the day it launched on Target. Literally, there was like two people that before me that got the last ones, because they got very limited. Anyways, I never even seen it. But why are we selling this system? And then turn around and saying we're not doing a on the Switch, that is, not the doing virtual a virtual console. So do you think this is their way of, like, well, we're giving you those games in an HD version, HD setting?
No, I don't think that's what they're doing. So everybody has to be careful about how you look at Nintendo's motives. Everybody wants to put them in the same box as anybody who makes games. And the trick is that they have never thought the way anybody else has. There's a reason that they are who they are. Going all the way back to the rivalry with Sega and Atari and things like that, Nintendo has always looked at the world through Mario's hat. You know? And that gives you a different perspective on things. So they're not selling this as a way to say, well, look, we're giving you retro games. That's not what they're doing. Somebody at Nintendo thought, people would love this. It's nostalgia. It's our classics. It's our best of. Let's just give everybody our best of. It'll be easy for us to make from a technical perspective, and people will just eat it up, and it'll be cheap. It'll be a toy. Because that's the thing. Nintendo is toys, right? You know, the Xbox One X is this powerhouse of a machine where they're hitting on teraflops and 4K and 60 frames per second and things that a casual gamer doesn't really care about. And PlayStation's not that much different. The PS4 is 4K gaming and HDR and... that's not Nintendo. Nintendo is, look at these bright neon color Joy-Cons, and let's play ARMS with spring ARMS characters that are colorful, and, you know, you can take it with you wherever you go, or you can play this game where you shake up a champagne bottle, and everybody's like, wait a minute, doesn't that look like something not safe for work? And Nintendo's like, I don't know what you're talking about, and they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
So they wanted to make some toys, and they wanted to make some people happy, and they just didn't really prepare for the overwhelming response. With that said, if they had put all of their resources, all of their money, their time, their engineers who worked on the NES and now the SNES classics, and put them just onto the virtual console and said, build the virtual console, and at a minimum, we got the same 51 games between these two classic consoles, we would still then, by the end of September, have a virtual console with 51 titles in it.
I see, and that's my issue. Is
you sell the NES ones at $199 a pop, and that gets you to the normal retail price of the NES Classic. And then I think the SNES one was 80. So you sell those for $4 a pop and you get back to the 80. So there's your answer.
But that's exactly my I know we're trying to put rationalizations, like you said, to Nintendo, who's a wild card essentially, but yeah, it's like you guys could still make this money, you know, with a virtual console. That's kind of where I'm going at with it. But yeah,
and
yeah.
I think most people would prefer a virtual console because that is the future. I want to take my games with me. That's why I have the Switch. That's why I had a 3DS.
Right. Something I want to touch on. So like I said multiple times before I started on my spiel that we've gotten mixed reviews. Derek posted something in a gamer group explaining how he is excited for this. I will not give any names, but I will give you a number of people were extremely pissed about this. So if you guys are listening and I want you to comment, do you think this is a good thing or bad? And just, you can do one word. You can say yes. You can say no. I just want to know what people think. Is this something you guys want? You're going to buy, you're looking forward to it, or is it something you just want to complete your collection for? I think that was a very good point you brought up there, Derek, is you're going to buy it because you want Star Fox, but and there's also like, I don't know, the other 70% of you that's like, well, it's Nintendo and I collect Nintendo shit, so I should probably have all Nintendo shit.
And that is a big group. You're right. That's something that, you know, we need to keep in mind. That there are people who just collect Nintendo consoles. And I'm not saying that I don't do that. I don't need to be a completionist when it comes to console collection. But I know there are people out there that do, and that's perfectly fine. I have no problem with that. Again, if you're buying the game if you're buying this for yourself or for a family member or a friend, hey, all power to you. That's the point, is to buy it for somebody you think's going to enjoy it. And that's all that's really important. So if you do have an opinion about this, hit us up at Heroes Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, or heroespodcast.com, and you can comment on the article there that this podcast is in. Let us know what you think. Are you going to try and get one? Do you think it's a terrible idea? I do want to know. Now, Nintendo's not the only one who's taking advantage of this imitation retro gaming, this nostalgia gaming, and that is Sega. So, before E3, I predicted that Sega was going to announce a new console. While I was wrong, and Atari actually announced a brand new console, which is super weird, Sega did officially announce Sega Forever, which is an effort for them to bring all of the Sega Genesis games to mobile devices, meaning smartphones and tablets, for free with ads. $2 a piece if you want to remove the ads. Now, this is an interesting move because I have never enjoyed playing a classic console game on a smartphone. I don't care how good the port was, the controls never worked for me. So this actually, it's already available. It started last week. There's 5 games right now: Sonic the Hedgehog, Phantasy Star 2, Comic Zone, Kid Chameleon, and Altered Beast are all available. John, have you tried any of these yet?
Not on my phone, but I own four of the five on this list. So,
are they good choices?
Sonic is a classic. I prefer Sonic 2, but Sonic is a very good game. Comic Zone, I will have to say, is probably one of the most cutting-edge games for its time. It is very different. It is very cool. But it is, it's a little outdated now, but it's a very cool game. It's very stylistically cool. Kid Chameleon is fun. These are all platformer type games. So, you know, you're side scrolling, but, Altered Beast is, in my personal opinion, boring as all get out. I don't know why people like it. It's kind of annoying. It really is. But I have to agree with you on cell phone. So I saw something the other day, and I was actually going to bring this up. So, like, the problem I have is my thumb slides, or I don't know if I'm tapping the right spot of the phone. They actually created this suction cup joystick things you can put on your phone that actually work for those buttons.
Really?
You know that?
I don't think I've seen those.
They're actually really, really cool, and I haven't had a chance to buy them yet because I haven't had any reasons to buy it, but I think that's a game changer. If they can master that to where it feels comfortable, like you know how they have those rubber Joy-Con grips that you bought from Amazon that are basically shaped like a controller? Mm-hmm. Something like that for your mobile device but kind of goes over the screen would be a really smart idea.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess so. Here's kind of my take on this. So Nintendo goes out and they make their little classics, and you bring them home, you plug them into your TV, you're good to go. The controllers are essentially the same. I'm sure that the hardcore gamers out there will feel a difference. Sega decides, you know what, we're not going to do that. We're going to take our games from 1991 and throw them on the iPhone 7 and the Galaxy S8 and an iPad Pro. I feel like it's a bad idea because
Why?
Now you're mixing modern state-of-the-art technology with games that are outdated, that are old, that you're basically just throwing ports onto these other platforms. And this is something that I would expect ROM makers to do, guys who want fan games and things like that, who, you know, want to be able to play their games on every platform imaginable, get a, you know, Raspberry Pi running them, or get this running on an iWatch. I think that it's a cheap move, especially since it's all ad supported and it's $2 to get rid of the ads. Because at the end of the day, you're still playing this on a phone. You're playing this on your tablet. And they're not optimized for touchscreen devices, you know, because when they were created, the only touchscreen devices were the highest end of phones. And I mean phones. I'm not even talking cell phones, you know, that had like, you know, semi-touch buttons on Etch-a-Sketch style screens, you know. These aren't touchscreen games. And when you go on your iPhone, in your Android phone, there's touchscreen games out there. There's touchscreen versions of tabletop games, and there's touchscreen versions of, you know, for example, Super Mario Run or Pokemon Go. You know, Pandemic is a great tabletop game that has an amazing app, just like Ticket to Ride. These games are played in a specific way because they're touchscreen.
So you're thinking that this isn't going to work properly. Well, I mean, it's going to work, but you think it's not going to feel right.
It's going to be a negative experience for most players.
That's what I'm asking.
Because you're either going to have your classic gamers who grew up with these games and now want to play them on their phone, and it's not going to work right for them because they're used to the controller. Or it's going to be new gamers who never got to play the originals and are used to playing touch-enabled, touch-designed, touch-focused games and apps on their devices. Because when you sit down on your couch and grab your DualShock or grab your Xbox controller or your Joy-Cons, you have an expectation in your head of what that is. But when you pull out your phone, when you're sitting, you know, on the subway or something like that, you have a different set of expectations. If Sega wanted to do this, they should have done it in a similar way to how Nintendo did it. And they already did that, man. You have it. You have that Genesis with the built-in games, don't you?
I do. And they're releasing another version of that that's even better.
So tell me, why would you not get that and instead pay $2 a pop to get rid of ads on these games, which you can't use physical controls with?
I personally wouldn't do it personally. I think it's cool it's mobile, but again, I'd have to try it out. I feel like for me the experience is I want to play a retro game and I want to play it on my retro controller and I want to feel retro. That's just how that goes. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point that you bring up there about the experience. The only thing I can think of why Sega would have went this route is because, number one, Sega's kind of they're small fish compared to Nintendo. I think they're even owned by Nintendo now at this point, aren't they?
Partially. Okay. Nintendo has partial ownership.
I feel like they're trying to be a little different, and they're thinking, well, what's the best way we can maximize with the least amount of money? And going mobile, it's a lot less expensive to develop a mobile app than it is to develop a system and have it manufactured, or to create a new console and have it manufactured and ported. So I'm thinking they're looking at this as like a cost-benefit analysis.
That's fair.
In this particular situation, is like they're like, well, we don't have enough fan base to create a new console, so we're not going to do that. We don't know where we're going to put all these games, so the best way to do that is probably create a mobile app.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really my thinking. I think they realize where they stand on the totem pole, and it's definitely not with a console. I bought the console, their retro version, because it still accepted old Sega cartridges, and I thought that was awesome and genius, and I started going to every vintage stock in Kansas City and looking to see if I found some of my old classic games to play. That was the only reason I bought it, is because it took cartridges.
Well, that works, man.
That's a big thing for me. Like, I feel like if they created a updated graphics, like a basically if the SNES Classic had everything it has that currently comes with it, but with a cartridge slot, that would be the perfect retro machine for me.
That's fair. Yeah, I get that.
Well, you get screwed out of it if you're someone who already has games.
Well, that's the thing. This has to be in addition to, right? So I've got my NES already, so the Classic would have to sit on top of it or something. So
I just picked up a Retro Duo, so I have a SNES Classic, or excuse me, SNES cartridge slot, and I have just an NES cartridge slot, so that's really nice.
Nice. Well, I mentioned it a little bit earlier that Atari did announce that they're coming back with a console.
Say what?
This is so weird, man. So
it is.
When we saw the first Blade Runner 2049 trailers, and they had the big Atari sign, I'm like, oh, that's so great that they kept that in there. That's awesome. I didn't really think anything of it, but now I think it's been this big ploy, this big, you know, because it's been like 30 years, and they've come out and said it's going to be a very PC focused kind of console, which implies it'll be something like an Xbox instead of like a Switch or something, and that's all we really know. So I'm going to say this is my post E3 prediction, is that I think the Atari will announce what their new console is and have like some actual looks at it, not maybe everything, but we'll get to know about it right when the new Blade Runner comes out.
Oh my God. Why Blade Runner? Just curious.
Because of that connection to that time period, because they have, you know, the giant Atari light up sign in the movie like they did in the original movie, and it's kind of a cultural tie-in. And I think that both Blade Runner and Atari are from a different era, and if one's going to come back in 2017, then why not the other?
So let me ask you this. This is something I've been thinking about ever since they released this, is I know they didn't have like the greatest games, but do you think they will have a virtual console or port?
I think yes. I think if it is a PC kind of console, I think it'll have an emulator built in to play classic Atari games. But I think this is going to be designed to play their PC library. And it's a pretty big fucking library of games. So if they do this right, if it's good hardware, if it really has this emulation that I'm talking about, or the ability just to play it natively, if it's Linux-based or something like that, and they can run Steam, for example, this could be a real shake-up to the market that's been a fairly stable video game market for the last decade. You know, because for the last 10 or so years, you've had Microsoft and Sony going head-to-head every generation. This one's got a Blu-ray player, but this one's got HD DVD, or this one's got 4K games. Well, this one also has 4K Blu-ray and 8 teraflops, right? Just back and forth trading punches, and we've got The Last of Us, but we have Halo. And then Nintendo's in the background with Mario power-ups and Smash Brothers and banana peels, throwing blue turtle shells everywhere. But Atari could come out of nowhere and create a weird niche where they can provide a PC experience in the living room, but also have this library of classic games that a lot of people in the gaming community would love to get their hands on in a legitimate way.
I'm not sure what that consists of, but they apparently said this has been years in the making. So how long is that? That makes me wonder, is this something they've been working on for the past 12 years? Is it outdated? Is it going to keep up? The most revolutionary system I can think of, you probably won't agree with me on it, is I actually think the Steam Box is genius. The Steam Box is genius.
And it's a good idea.
If I didn't have a major console already, I would very, very much so be interested in the Steam Box. So
I think the big difference is Atari has a catalog. Because, you know, people have to remember, Atari stopped making consoles, but they never left the industry.
What was they've that? Been the making... Jaguar? The 96 Jaguar was the last one they did?
The Jaguar. I forgot about that thing.
Yeah. It's a 96, I think.
No, but Atari has this giant catalog of games. I mean, hell, I bought one of their games on the Steam Summer Sale, you know? If they can put their whole catalog on this machine, and then at the same time bring in other titles, you can find a really interesting market of people who can't afford a gaming machine, a gaming PC, and, you know, don't really fall into the Xbox or PlayStation line, because those are a bit of specifics. You know, you can't make everybody happy. Maybe Atari can find the middle ground.
Hold on. Can you give me an example of Atari? Like, you know, I totally spaced out this whole time. I was thinking like Atari systems and old retro games, but you're 100% correct. Atari has been producing games for a really long time, and I didn't even think about that. So I'm looking up some of the most popular Atari games, and apparently, let's see here. The number one game is
Pitfall. I mean, Pitfall's a big one. They've got the whole Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise, which is what I was alluding to. I mean, they've got a lot of games. They release stuff on other consoles. I mean, if we look at just PC stuff for a minute, they've got a bunch of different racing games. There's a Chronicles of Riddick game that they have that's out there. Alone in the Dark is out there. Yeah, they've got some games that are not necessarily the biggest hits in the world, but they're out there. They're games that people have heard of. They've got a Ghostbusters game as well, and they've got them for different platforms. They've got stuff on Xbox Live and PSN and PC, of course. So this might be their opportunity. And when you say, like, how long has it been in development, I'd say probably 3 years. They've probably been working on this for 3 years, trying to decide where they fit into the market. And if that's the case, they might be able to release this thing out of nowhere, maybe in the spring of 2018, and be next year's big console after nobody bought the Xbox One X and everybody's already bought the Switch from the holidays. Wait 6 months, launch the Atari.
You think so? I guess what does it mean? I know we're very limited on details, but what does a PC-based machine mean? Does that mean it's going to have PC parts? Is it going to run like the Steam Box through your PC?
No. I think it's going to be more of like an Xbox, right? The Xbox runs Windows. It's a PC architecture. I think that what that means is Atari is going to run something probably like a different version of Linux. It'd probably be a proprietary version of Linux, you know, which for those who are not familiar, it's just a different operating system like Ubuntu or Fedora and Red Hat are versions of Linux. And Linux is open source. So they could do a custom version of Linux and run, I mean, Linux, like Ubuntu supports Steam. You can play Steam games on Linux. Mm-hmm. So because of that architecture, that means all of their games can already run on that type of architecture. So that's the type of console I'm expecting this to be.
Wow, so that's a real direct competition to Sony and Xbox.
Well, I mean, I think it's indirect competition. It's going to be a price point. It's going to have to come in at like $199 or $249 for people to even look at it. If it's higher than that, why would you pay more money than an Xbox or a PS4?
Well, so that makes it very interesting, though, because the competition, as it currently sits, and I foresee the Switch being people who couldn't get the Switch this holiday season still going after the Switch next year. That puts it in direct competition with the Switch.
It does, but the Switch is going to have the edge because of the portability and the first-party titles.
Absolutely. See, that's
how Nintendo's carved out their market. So Atari has to come in and be different. They have to provide a unique experience with their whole back catalog at a low price, $199, maybe $249, depending on what it ends up being. But when you push that margin, if you go up higher, no one's going to pay for it. People will pay more for the Switch because it's portable and because that's how you play Mario and Metroid and Smash Brothers. You know, you can't do it any other way. But Atari games are not that important yet. So this is
thinking that, like, what if they're already developing new exclusive titles for it? Holy shit!
And they might be. I mean, they really might be, but we'll have to wait and see what they are, because they've been playing the long game then, if that's the case, because their catalog of recent games is not amazing. They put stuff out, but none of it is, like, hardcore stuff. I mean, honestly, the Roller Coaster Tycoon games are probably the highest profile stuff they have.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm very curious to see that. Like even till this day, we really don't actually know what the Switch is capable of. We actually don't really know what it can do. Like, there hasn't been a game that's really pushed it that hard.
Yeah, and we're going to see more of that as the year goes on, games kind of pushing it.
I think Skyrim might be the beginning of that, in my personal opinion. If it can go without lagging, because when I first played Skyrim originally, it was on the PlayStation 3. Dude, the lag, the graphic, we're talking graphic breakups were just terrible. It just couldn't handle it. So
why I got rid of it. I had it for the 360, and I got rid of it for the same reason.
Yeah. I mean, it would shudder, and it would cause graphical issues. Like, it just couldn't handle it. So I'm very curious to see how the Switch handles Skyrim.
It'll be interesting. So as we get close here on time, I'm curious, are there any games you're playing right now that is new, something that you've picked up recently?
Well, I picked up Hollow Knight, but I haven't played it yet.
Okay.
And I picked up a bunch of, my Steam classics that I haven't quite touched. So, how about you? Besides Minecraft.
besides Minecraft. No, so I tried, I'm trying Super Hot a little bit, trying to get into that. It's pretty
cool. Tell me about Super Hot.
So, it's an interesting game. It's a first-person shooter puzzle game, as I mentioned. Everything is white with black outlines, the gun is black, and the enemies are red. And it's all done in kind of like polygram kind of graphics. And time only really moves when you move. So you have to kind of plan out your route and move in stutter steps to get around, so you don't get shot, and things like that. It's pretty interesting. I like it so far. My big focus with the 4th of July weekend here is to finish Gears of War 4. Finally finish Gears of War 4 and get another Divine Beast in Legend, in Zelda Breath of the Wild. So
those are good goals. My goal is to at least touch Zelda, because it's been so long. Just to even touch it one time would be
fair enough, man. But I'm not, and also I'm doing some tabletop gaming this holiday weekend too. Having some people over, hopefully, you can make it, man. We're gonna play some Munchkin.
I love Munchkin. We played Munchkin for the first time, audience, if you're listening, for the first time a few weeks ago. It's an awesome game. It's like D&D, but more fun and less heartbreaking.
Well, and we've got a couple expansion packs. We got the Cthulhu expansion pack, and then I'm drawing a blank on the name of the other one, but it's got like the classic movie monsters like Frankenstein and
that's cool.
Dracula and stuff. So should be a good time.
That's awesome, man.
But I think that's going to be it for us, dude. We'll get back next week and talk about something after the holiday break.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit us up at heroespodcast.com and at heroespodcast on all the social medias. Don't forget to stop by iTunes and drop us a review. If you do, we'll give you a shout out. And when we reach 10 reviews, we will randomly select one of you to get a free console game. It'll be something cool, I promise. So go do that. We'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for listening.